The vast majority of films made during the silent period are lost to us or only exist in fragments, so it's a newsworthy event for cinephiles when an important title is restored to its full glory after years of being seen in truncated form. The newly restored 1925 fantasy adventure film, The Lost World, will be making its debut in El Paso soon with an added bonus. It will be screened with live musical accompaniment by the Alloy Orchestra. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is no stranger to silent films. For decades, Ken Winokur has been writing music and performing with silent films as one-third of the musical group, the Alloy Orchestra, and he joins me today by phone from his office in Boston. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Charles.
Great to talk to you again, my friend, and you will soon be in El Paso. You'll be here on September 17th at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema for a 3 p.m. screening of this film, The Lost World, from 1925, in which you and your bandmates will be performing your own score to this film. Do you remember the first time you saw The Lost World?
Yeah. Alloy has been working with this film for about 25 years. So I watched it on a videotape. Remember videotapes?
Oh, yeah.
25 years ago, and my clear remembrance is that the music that accompanied that videotape was Vivaldi's The Four Seasons.
Surreal experience.
You know, it was one of the kind of things that kind of pushed us into this endeavor. It was like clear at that point that, you know, more appropriate music needed to go with that film, and, you know, extrapolating it further to virtually every film out there needed some help.
This is one of those films that's been put together in various lengths over time as more and more material is found on it. It wasn't truly a lost film in that footage existed, but I'm guessing back what you were watching on VHS, that first version was probably only about an hour long, maybe?
Yeah, correct, even less.
Yeah, and now it's close to an hour and a half, I think.
Yes, and I just should say that, you know, sometimes you look at these things and groan and say, well, it was long enough. Well, this one has just got better and better and better, and it's become a really great film again.
I've only seen it in its original truncated form from many years ago, so I'm really excited to see this new restoration. And, you know, growing up as a kid who loves science fiction and fantasy and adventure films, back before the days of VHS, you could read about films like The Lost World and their impact on technical achievement and special effects, but also just their place in cinema history, and maybe get a picture or two from the film. And so your imagination had to construct what this film must be like. But so many years on, it's amazing that this material is still coming out of closets. And I think reading up on the restoration, this latest version was put together from 11 different sources in order to get the most complete version of The Lost World we've had to date, I guess, since it was debuted in 1925.
Yeah, absolutely. The people at Lobster Film and producer David Shepard have just gone to incredible lengths to try to get this film back in the condition that we all knew it should be and could be. Pretty exciting that it's now out.
This is a title that was based on an Arthur Conan Doyle story, which is about a jungle expedition that discovers, I guess, a land the time forgot. It's got ape men and dinosaurs and all sorts of amazing things happening, which in 1925 must have just been an extraordinary achievement, special effects-wise.
Well, the animator, Willis O'Brien, who went on to have a very long and distinguished career in Hollywood doing animations, and the dinosaurs are so good in parts of this that you can literally suspend disbelief. You can actually just say, oh, you know, they just went out and filmed these dinosaurs. Interestingly, there are other spots in this thing where the dinosaurs are really herky-jerky, and you can actually see the shadows where they've, you know, animated the cells and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's inconsistent in its quality, but charming in some ways because of that.
That's a really good word, charming. That's the one I would pick, too, that the beauty in these early special effects films, I think, is in seeing how they were made. Because you're enjoying the story and you're enjoying the technology of the time, but it also has the imprint of the hands that made it, in this case, the famous Willis O'Brien, who probably influenced more special effects visual artists over the years than anybody, would go on to make King Kong a few years after this, which, of course, is a pioneering film. When you sit down with a silent film and look at it for the first time and are thinking about, you know, is this a title that is worthy of the Alloy Orchestra and a new score? I mean, do you get an emotional response to it and you saying, okay, that's it? Or is it a more rational thought process that goes into choosing a film to score?
Well, it's a little of both. I mean, the one thing I really try to do is when I'm going to watch a film, consider the possibility of working with it, you know, I clear my schedule. I make sure I'm rested. You know, I have a snack or whatever. I want to put myself in that space where I can really enjoy the film. Because mm-hmm. you don't want to be interrupted. You don't want to come back to it six times, chop up the flow. You want to see how this film washes over you. Does it engage you? Does it grab you by the throat? And, you know, that's one thing I'm looking for. How much am I enjoying this film? The second thing is I'm literally thinking, is this a film I feel I have something to contribute to? Is mm-hmm. there room in this thing for an alloy orchestra soundtrack? And, you know, we run the gamut of films from, you know, Metropolis at the sort of one side of the scale of, you know, high action disaster films to something like Alfred Hitchcock's Blackmail, which, like most Alfred Hitchcock films, well, first of all, I should say, people probably don't even know this, but Alfred Hitchcock had a long career in the silent yeah. era. And Blackmail is just like his other films. It's taut and spare and quiet and understated. And the music has to reflect that. So we have a lot of flexibility, but there are also films that I just don't feel I can, you know, offer something to. And it's not just me. It's the other guys. You know, we have things we're good at. We're great at storms and wars and, you know, fights and, you know, things that are active and fun, but also things that have a strong emotional kind of quality to them. And in this particular case, this has got everything. You know, this is a dinosaur film. There's all sorts of battles between the dinosaurs and the people, and there's terrible loss and suffering of, you know, the previous explorers, you know, so that it's got all those elements that make it really perfect for alloy orchestra.
I'm also thinking of all the silent films I've seen you perform and that you have in your repertoire. This may be the most family-friendly film. Not that the others, the kids can't watch the others content-wise, but that, you know, this has a lot of fantasy and adventure elements that I think particularly kids might be find more accessible.
Oh, absolutely. And everybody knows that kids love dinosaurs.
Yes.
There's no two ways about it.
The amazing thing, too, I was thinking about this driving into the studio today, that when this film came out in 1925, it was only a few decades after the very first dinosaur fossils had been found. It had captured the imagination of the population in the early 20th century, you know, just what these creatures were. But there wasn't a lot of hard science on these creatures, and yet the way that they're animated and personalized in the film is pretty extraordinary given the lack of hard data on what made a dinosaur a dinosaur.
From what I understand, and of course I'm sort of old school, that a lot of the names of dinosaurs have changed over a period of time as more research has been done on them and what their, you know, history is and family origins. So the names of the dinosaurs in this film, I think for kids, will strike them as wrong. I think right. that they've learned what we now have as the correct names,
right.
and these are the old names.
I want to ask you about Alloy Orchestra. You've been together for quite a long time performing with silent films, and really, I think, played an important role in bringing silent films back and making them appreciated by general audiences. So I want to give you thanks for that, all of those decades of turning people back on to the power of silent film. But your music is, if people haven't seen you perform live, you're not attempting to recreate period music that people in 1925 would have heard with these films. You're a very modern trio, a lot of percussion. Tell us a little bit about the types of instruments that you all play.
Well, we're best known for our signature is what we call our junk percussion kit. You know, a lot of it's made out of metal, various types of metal, hence the name Alloy. The orchestra is actually the more questionable part of the name because there's only three of us. Most people don't think of three people as constituting an orchestra. But I did find a definition someplace that says an orchestra is three or more people. So I think we barely fit into the definition. So our junk percussion thing is a combination of conventional percussion, a lot of orchestral percussion, bass drum, snare drum, cymbals, and gongs, but also a lot of atypical things. Anything that makes a noise when you strike it or rub it or just generally goose it is fair game for us. So that can include horseshoes, which have a very pretty sound, sort of like a triangle. We have four of them hanging in four different tones, which allows you to do a little melody on them. Same thing's true with plumbing pipes. We use some pots and pans. And we're probably best known for A Bedpan, which probably will not be making an appearance in this particular performance. The Bedpan's got a very harsh sound. It's appropriate for certain things. When Buster Keaton gets electrocuted in 1 week, we use the Bedpan, and it's just perfect.
You know, I think a lot of people who have not seen silent films think of them as old and creaky, and by comparing them with such modern music so beautifully and artistically, that to me it shows just how strong silent films are in a form language, in the power of imagery in these films, that so many years on, 90, 100 years on, you can surround them with this incredibly contemporary music, and they still work, and their power is still undiminished. So I'm thankful that you're not trying to recreate those period pieces from the time, because I think it will give people a new appreciation for these films.
I must take a little bit of an exception with your description of us very modern music. We like to think of ourselves as being very disconnected to time in that respect.
Yeah.
We don't play music from the 20s. We're not playing early jazz. We're not playing ragtime,
right,
you know, string bands. But on the other hand, we're not playing rock and roll. We're not doing free jazz or bop.
Exactly.
We're doing a much more kind of hard to pinpoint kind of orchestral style that could probably have been done in the 20s, not that they necessarily would have.
I'm thinking avant-garde music then, if you say from the 20s.
When we play an avant-garde film, we'll play avant-garde music, music that in many ways has its origins in the 1920s. But when we were doing a dinosaur film, we're looking for a big, exciting kind of orchestral sound, you know, one that can charge the soundtrack with the same action you're seeing on the screen. We're really careful not to force the viewer out of the reverie that the film has put them in with some music that is inappropriate.
That's a much better description, that it is complementary still, despite not being a period recreation or an attempt at period recreation. It's going to be fantastic to get to see this film restored in El Paso on September 17th. I really appreciate you all coming down to El Paso for that. And I look forward to seeing you at the Alamo Drafthouse Theater in just another week.
Well, I'm really excited. We have never played in an Alamo. We don't have one yet in Boston. We've been hearing so many great stories about them, and now that they're spreading all over the country, this is a great opportunity for us to, you know, collaborate with a real powerhouse and film presentation. And anyway, I can't think of a better organization to be working with.
Indeed. Well, safe travels, and we will see you in a little over a week here in El Paso.
Great. Can't wait.
My guest today has been Ken Winokur, one-third of the musical trio, the Alloy Orchestra. The Alloy Orchestra specializes in composing and performing original scores for silent films and will be in El Paso for a special screening of the recently restored 1925 film, The Lost World. The Lost World is a fantasy adventure film about an expedition to a remote jungle where prehistoric beasts still roam. The film features the pioneering stop-motion effects of Willis O'Brien, who would later bring King Kong to life. The Alloy Orchestra will perform live with The Lost World on Sunday, September 17th at 3 p.m. at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, and tickets are available at the Alamo box office or online at drafthouse.com. For more information on the music and films of the Alloy Orchestra, log on to alloyorchestra.com. Thanks today to Lauren Terrazas for engineering the show. On Film's producer is Dennis Wu. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.